Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friend, have stumbled upon the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of September 2017. Folks, I gotta tell you something. You're wonderful. You're a masterpiece. You're beautifully made. You're important to people because you're important to me. You're highly favored by your creator, whether that is a god or by the law of averages and physics working in tandem. You're thirsty for knowledge and addicted to wonder. You, my friend, are an oddball. And here on this show, well, you're family. And we are one. This is an episode that I've been waiting for a very, very, very long time to do. It's going to be awesome. Okay? Because there's nothing more strange, bizarre, and more well-known in the realm of the paranormal than God. Everybody knows who God is. Well, they claim to. Oh boy, you already see I'm in over my head with this, but that's okay. That's all right. First things first, guys, we got to talk about what happened in the month of August, and I think you all know where I'm going with this. Listen, Hurricane Harvey, big-time disaster. This tropical depression has left the world, really, with depression, especially people in the Gulf Coast, United States. I got to throw this out to you guys. You know, I'm here in Canada. I can't really say I'm warm, but I'm safe. And I'm going to say this, you know, if you've got it in your heart to donate, okay, guys, to help out the people for this disaster and relief, there's the American Red Cross. There's all kinds of things out there right now. But please help the victims of Hurricane Harvey, okay, by making your financial donation to the American Red Cross's Disaster Relief Services. And I'm, of course, giving this pro bono. I want to let people know the Red Cross are awesome. Please donate. Please help these people. If you are in Houston, if you are in Texas, if you are anywhere near this disaster, if this disaster has touched you at all and you're a fan of my show, I want you to know that my heart goes out to you, okay? And I'm just want to get that out to the people. There are ways we can help, even in a small way, you know? My friend was telling me the other day, you know, just he made a small donation. He made a $50 donation to the Red Cross. And you would not believe how much food and clothing and things you can get with $50, okay, with the government's help, okay? So just throw that out there to you. Even a small amount can really, really help. And I know that if you are out there, I'll once again say this to you, and you're listening to my show and you've been affected by this horrible disaster, my heart goes out to you, and I dedicate this show, the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, okay, for the month of September 2017, to you guys. So here we are, guys. We're at episode 44. Of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, your monthly paranormal variety show. It's been an insanely busy month for yours truly. If you guys have been following me at all over the last year or so, I've talked very candidly about becoming a foster parent and making it a career for myself. And, you know, I felt a calling to this, and so did my wife, and I feel like this is where our family is headed. And, well, the miracles happened. Of course, I won't say his name on air. I'm not supposed to, but I will say this. I met my little miracle man, and what a moment that was. What a moment that was. He'll be here hopefully within the next few weeks. So when you guys talk to me next, I'm actually going to be the father of, well, three now. I'll be even more busy. That's exactly what I need, to be even more busy. Thank God I'm not in the driver's seat, you know, of all this. The things that had to line up and the things that actually happened over the last 9 months have just been... I'm awestruck. I really am. I'm completely awestruck. There is no other way to really tell you guys about this whole situation. It has completely consumed my life, my family, my kids, my wife. It's completely consumed us because this is what happens when you get promoted in life. This is what happens when you are ready to ascend to the next level. There's a lot of chatter about what you do. There's a lot of stress. And, you know, I always equate it to the birth of a child. When a child is born and comes into the world, the only world it knows is its mother's, well, uterus. Strange to think. Nice and warm, everything's dark. When it's time to be born, that child must truly feel like it's the end of their life. But what happens is they come out. And life actually starts. And I think it's a beautiful metaphor for where we're all headed. At least that's what I believe. And I know there's a lot of people who listen to my show who don't believe in God. And that's okay, because there's 1,000 podcasts out there about, you know, why God isn't real and all this. He's very real to me, and he's very real in my life. And just to give an example of what I mean by this, you know, for many, many months, I was literally driving in the dark here, really driving in the dark, not knowing how all this was going to work out, if this little child was going to be coming to me or not, and it was so, so, so stressful. My finances are in a mess, you know, my family's falling apart, there's all kinds of crazy things going on, all hell is breaking loose, and still inside me is this small voice saying, it's all going to be okay, just go with it, it's all going to be okay. You know, I always think of Bruce Lee talking about water, you know, you got to be water. You got to be willing to fill in where you need to go and be flexible in all ways. And anyway, I was driving in the dark for so very, very long. And then my supervisor looks at me and tells me the name of the child. And the name of the child means the world to me and anybody in Christianity. I won't say his name on air, but let me just tell you, unless you're a Christian, you wouldn't know. Anyway, of course, I'm all you would not imagine the amount of stress is put on my family, not knowing when this is happening and things going on and stuff like that. And then you get the call one day and you find out this child's name. And it all starts with the name. And then you go to the hospital and you meet this child. And you meet him. And he's there lying there and he's got, you know, all kinds of stuff going on with him. And you know, your calling is to look after him. Your calling is to look after him, to help him. And let me tell you something. That's where God's to. God isn't in the disaster, okay? There's so many people out there right now who are homeless, who are hungry, who have nothing going on. My heart goes out to Texas, okay? But you know what? You cannot deny that a disaster like this brings out the best in people. That's where God's to, man. He's inside every one of you. He don't control the disasters, guys. I know there's lots written about that, and you can debate with me all day long. He didn't wash away, okay, part of the United States because he's mad at the United States. That's just silly. This is stuff I've seen all along. That's not how this works. He is in the hands of the rescuers. He is in the people who are taking people in. The churches that are opening up their doors to help people, okay? Yeah, I heard all about Joel Osteen, okay? I heard all about it. And I've heard enough about it because guess what? That's one church out of like 1,000, okay, that are they're helping. Come on, get real. Get real, okay? There are churches opening doors and mosques and all kinds of places, all religious buildings, okay? There's gymnasiums. There's people helping out all over the place. Please see the good that these people are bringing. And it all wraps back to one thing, and this is why I chose this as a career, to be a foster parent. And I chose it because this is how I can help and feel good about helping. And don't get me wrong. It's a bittersweet. It's a bittersweet thing. There can be no child in care without turmoil, okay? But there's one thing I can be. I can be that steady voice. What are you doing in your life right now to help other people? That's a great question, you know? And that's what this podcast is all about. It's about God. Yeah, okay. I thought about the name of this, and I was like, there's no way I could put up a name that people haven't already heard before, right? So I just thought I'd put up something silly and make people kind of laugh at first. And I said, okay, how about Ain't God Odd? It's just perfect because it just rings true with my world. And anybody who's followed this podcast for a long time knows my father's story. And if you haven't heard my father's story, it's time you listen to the very first episode of The Odd the Newfoundland that came out many years ago. But anyway, that's beside the point. Onward and upward. It's time to get going. Once again, I'm going to drop it out there for everybody, okay? Make sure you guys donate. Get out there to Red Cross for Hurricane Harvey. Help people out any way you can. If you're affected by the storm, my heart goes out to you. My prayers are with you and your families. And I hope all things go your way and start to recede. I heard the water starting to recede. Right now, it's September 1st when this podcast comes out. I'm actually recording on September 1st because I've just been incredibly busy with stuff. So I've heard the floodwaters are receding in most parts. It's a good sign, guys. Everything will return to normal. Or, well, I should say a new normal. There's one thing I know about Americans. They come together when times are tough. They come together and they fight. And let me tell you, this is only the beginning. There's going to be a rebuilding. The month of August was a very, very heavy month in the world of the paranormal. All kinds of wonderful new things to talk about. It's time for me to jump into, well, the paranormal news. Remember that song that was like, I can't remember what it went like, it was something like, 99 red love balloons. Well, we got a new one. It's called 91 volcanoes discovered beneath Antarctica shelf. Yeah, you don't like that? You think that was terrible? Every time I sing, it's a disaster on this show. Scientists have discovered, or should I say, uncovered, what is now believed to be the largest volcanic region on the planet. The discovery, which emphasizes just how much there is still to learn about Antarctica, was made following a remote survey of the region by researchers from the University of Edinburgh. Found in an area known as the West Antarctic Rift System, the volcanoes range in height from 100 meters to 3,850 meters and bear similarities to those found in East Africa's volcanic ridge. The survey, which involved measuring the shape of the land using ice-penetrating radar, was carried out following a suggestion by third-year anniversary student Max van Wyk de Vries. Antarctica remains among the least studied areas of the globe, and as a young scientist, I was excited to learn about something new and not well understood, he said. After examining existing data on West Antarctica, I began discovering traces of volcanism. Naturally, I looked into it further, which led to the discovery of almost 100 volcanoes under the ice sheet. It is currently unclear whether or not the newly discovered volcanoes are still active, but it just goes to show you, we still don't know it all about our wonderfully, amazingly giant and, well, kind of crazy world. 91 volcanoes discovered beneath Antarctic ice. What an amazing story. Congratulations to the scientists involved. What can I say? Even in the coldest place, we can still be red hot, hot, hot. Oh, my. Do you ever feel really, really tired and even the coffee can't kick in to help you? Well, maybe it's time you picked up your gamepad, man. Yeah. Answer me something. Did you ever actually hear this story before? Do video games help or hinder your brain? Yeah, it's a good question. Scientists have been studying the impact different types of games have had on certain areas of the brain. While the physical inactivity associated with long gaming sessions can have a negative impact on general fitness, there's no denying that video games can offer important health benefits as well. In addition to improving reflexes, some types of games can also benefit the player by improving problem solving, spatial awareness, and in the case of online gaming, even social confidence. In a recent study published by the journal Molecular Psychiatry, scientists used an MRI scanner to analyze what sort of impact frequent gaming sessions have on the brain. The results indicated that those who played action games lost gray matter in the hippocampus, while those who played platformers actually gained gray matter in the hippocampus. In the majority of action video games, there's an on-screen GPS overlaid on the screen, said study-led author Greg West. There's also wayfinding markers overlaid over the environment, and we know from past studies that when people are encouraged to navigate using these cues, really, they're not using their hippocampal memory system to navigate. It's kind of like your brain's autopilot. You could think of it that way. Those who do play action games, however, should not be too concerned by the results. If I had recommended a type of video game to someone, I would say a 3D platform or logic puzzle game, said West. The evidence is clear at this point that these games can be beneficial. So you know what that means? We actually have proof. Super Mario Brothers, it is actually good for your health. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's-a me, a smarter man. Oh, my. Oh, my. Okay. You got me. I'm here again. And what's my favorite thing? Well, I should say one of my favorite things. You all know I have a huge, huge love for dinosaurs. Yeah. Well, something really cool happened this month. The world's largest ever dinosaur has officially been identified. A 70-ton Titanosaur. What an awesome name for a dinosaur. Titanosaur. Like, come on. That's like right up there with Trogdor the Burninator. Trogdor! How about Titanosaur? Has been officially established as the largest land animal ever to walk the earth. This gargantuan plant eater, which roamed the planet around 100 million years ago, then global temperatures were much higher than they are today, was so large and heavy that it weighed the equivalent of 12 Asian elephants and measured 122 feet from head to tail. Titanosaur! Its remains were discovered in 2012 after ranch worker Aurelio Hernandez came across a number of fossils in Patagonia in Argentina. The ranch's owner, Oscar Mayo, quickly realized that there were dinosaurs and invited a team of paleontologists to come and examine them. It took a total of 18 months for the fossils to be extracted from the site. Incredibly, the haul included fossils from 6 individuals, none of which being fully grown, suggesting that there could be more, much larger specimens out there somewhere, just waiting to be discovered. Titanosaur! There is no doubt that the Titanosaur was pushing at the upper limits of body size, and it will be interesting to see what adaptations it developed to cope with all the pressures that went with being so big. Acquiring enough food and finding a mate, said paleontologist Stephen Parapat. Well, this is awesome. Let's have a little listen here to a little video about it all.
A new dinosaur is coming to the halls of the American Museum of Natural History. This Titanosaur is a really huge animal. It's over 120 feet long. It lived in what's now present-day Argentina about 100 million years ago. The last 20 years have really been the new golden age of dinosaur discovery. New kinds of animals have been found all over the world, in Africa, in Asia, in Patagonia, and this is just one of the latest ones. A couple of years ago, one of my ex-graduate students, Diego Pohl, sent me an email saying that a farmer near Galeo in Patagonia had found an amazing dinosaur, one of the largest land animals ever to live. Over the next couple of years, they extracted the specimen from the rocks at the ranch.
We went down to Argentina, and we 3D scanned all the bones in the field and in the lab. We had the whole skeleton completely digitized in 4 weeks. We took the data, and then we carved the bones out of slabs of foam with our 5-axis milling machine. We molded all the elements once they're carved up, and then we have a complete copy of the skeleton. And from there, we can cast all the elements out of fiberglass. And then the cast gets mounted.
When you're trying to determine the mass, the weight of an animal this big, it's pretty tough. A good example of that is if you pick up a puppy, it's pretty heavy compared to picking up a bird, a chicken, that's about the same size. That's because their bones are constructed very differently. The bones of this Titanosaur were, while not hollow, they were what we call cancellous. So they have lots of little tiny air pockets all through them, like a piece of styrofoam. So the bones themselves would be very, very, very light. That's the only way an animal like this could get so big. We chose to display this animal now because it represents one of the newest big dinosaurs that's been found anywhere in the world. We have some tremendous things here. We have the blue whale, we have the Tyrannosaurus rex, we have the Barosaurus, and now we're going to have the Titanosaur.
Okay, I'll stop. I really will stop. But I'm sure there's people out there who listen to my podcast who are probably fans of Trogdor the Burninator, so they will actually, you know, give me a free pass. And I mean, if they don't like that story, perhaps they'll like the next one. Let me tell you, the yoke will be on them, right? Oh, come on. It's an egg story. I thought that would be hilarious. The Belgian city of Malmedy was filled with revelers on Tuesday as the gigantic dish was cooked up. They cooked up an omelet made from 10,000 eggs. Oh, man, I cannot wait to get cracking on this story. What? What? You don't like it? The enormous culinary recreation, which used 10,000 eggs in a pan measuring more than 4 meters across, was created as part of our annual tradition that has been taking place for 22 egg-destroying years. Hundreds of people descended on the town to grab a plate and to sample the dish for themselves. The omelet was cooked up by chefs associated with the bizarrely titled World Fraternity of Knights of the Giant Omelet. We are the World Fraternity of Knights of the Giant Omelet. We say ni, which was founded back in 1973. How do you like that one? Monty Python reference. I love it. So what's weirder? They made an omelet out of 10,000 eggs, or the people who made the omelet is called the World Fraternity of Knights of the Giant Omelet. We are the World Fraternity of Knights of the Giant Omelet. We're here because the world needs to be yoked one egg at a time. We will not stop. We will crack down until our goal is sunny side up in front of us. Fine, fine. I'll stop with the egg jokes, okay? I'll stop with the egg jokes. And I'll just disappear. How does that sound? You can't do this to me. This is my show. Stop trying to take it over. I'll disappear. In fact, what if I told you Toyota has patented a cloaking device? Yeah, that's right. The car manufacturer is aiming to use a form of cloaking technology to improve their driver visibility. While Harry Potter had no trouble staying out of sight with his magical invisibility cloak at Hogwarts, rendering something invisible in the world has so far proven to be a lot more challenging. Now Japanese automotive giant Toyota has expressed an interest in developing its own unique type of cloaking device for use in the automobile industry and has even acquired a new patent for apparatuses and methods for making an object appear transparent. What's interesting about it is the way this technology will be used. Rather than cloaking an actual car, the idea will be to make the pillars to the left of the right of the dashboard transparent so that drivers could see their surroundings more clearly. And as an avid driver myself, I can say it is quite distracting sometimes. It's actually quite a clever concept, especially given that these pillars do obstruct the driver's view. The way in which the firm hopes to achieve this is also deceptively simple. Light from an object on an object side of the cloaking device is directed around an article within the cloaking region and forms an image on an image side of the cloaking device. Facing the driver's seat, of course, such the article appears transparent to an observer looking towards the object the patent reads. In other words, a series of mirrors will be used to bend visible light around the pillars so that the driver can see straight through them as they weren't even there. If the idea actually makes it a consumer vehicle, it could have the potential to save many, many lives. And let me tell you, good on Toyota, because that is an awesome, awesome idea. Anything to make driving more safe, I love it. Let's make sure this comes with the floor model cars that I can actually afford. Moving on. Okay, so we all lose stuff around the house, right? Like, have you ever spent, like, an hour of your life frantically searching for the TV remote? You know, and then, you know, you get on the TV and get on your phone anyway, but that's beside the point. Have you ever spent any amount of time at all frantically searching for your phone? True stress comes from searching for things you can't find. Well, what if I told you there's a castle that got this all figured out because there's a poltergeist who's after returning some of the lost valuables that have went missing. Yeah, a ghost has actually returned, or so they say, some lost valuables. Two priceless candlesticks that went missing years ago have suddenly turned up again in plain sight. The owner of the historic Ripley Castle in North Yorkshire, England, had last seen the candlesticks, thought to be worth $11,000, on Christmas Eve in 2014. Despite multiple thorough searches of the property, no sign of them was ever found. An insurance claim was eventually filed on the assumption that they had been stolen. Bizarrely, however, a short time later, the missing valuables suddenly reappeared, as if from nowhere. They were impossible to miss, said Dr. Thomas Ingleby. Three of us had searched the strong room from top to bottom and had searched it on three separate occasions. To find them sitting there in such plain view was quite astounding. Sir Thomas believes that ghosts of two children, Henry and Mary Ingleby, who were known to have died of leukemia in the castle during the 19th century, were responsible for hiding the candlesticks. We often have customers contact us when items that were feared lost turn up unexpectedly, but these tend to be smaller items like jewelry, which are easy to mislay, said David Bonehill, claims director. This is certainly the first time a customer has reimbursed us for items they suspect was returned by a ghost. So there you go. Very strange story. You know, it is not odd to your friend. It's not on the odd to Newfoundland. What can I say? What an amazing, amazing news lineup. We had 91 volcanoes discovered beneath the Antarctic ice. We had, you know, the idea that Super Mario might actually help hinder your brain. But, of course, we proved that otherwise. We had the Titanosaur! The Titanosaurus, the world's largest ever dinosaur, has officially been identified. We had a Belgian city that made an omelet out of 10,000 eggs. And let me tell you, it just cracks me up. Toyota has patented a cloaking device. Not what you think, but it actually will save lives. And we talked about a poltergeist just then who actually returned some lost valuables to a haunted castle. Ladies and gentlemen, all these stories have been odd to Newfoundland. All right, guys, it's almost time to get down and dirty with it with Laura. That's right, she's going to be talking about all kinds of wonderful things, such as, was Jesus an alien? You know, we are on the subject of God.
Thanks, John. I would like to welcome you to your MUFON Minute for September 2017. To start, we have a story from the right-leaning UK tabloid The Express. A Georgian cathedral features a fresco painting showing Christ being crucified with a large crowd gathering around him. But in the top left and right corners are what appear to be flying crafts or some form of advanced technology which humans clearly would not have had 2,000 years ago. The ships are dome-like and with three trails coming out of each, which look like a propellant of some kind. Art historians who have studied 11th century painting claim that the strange crafts actually represent guardian angels. But it's important to note that during the Byzantine period, which was presented in Southeast Europe and Southwest Asia up until around the 1450s, angels would have been depicted as human-like with wings. Conspiracy theory website Ancient Aliens said, "The unknown artist seems to be telling us that these flying saucers were present during the death of Jesus. The faces likely mean these crafts were piloted by people or beings and seem to play a central role in the event. They must have been part of the crucifixion story, at least as it was taught by the Georgian Orthodox Church. Were early artists and the Orthodox Church aware of certain facts about ancient aliens that have been veiled from us today? Throughout history, Jesus Christ and Christianity have been linked to alien activity. Two separate texts from Egypt, now being held in the Morgan Library and Museum in New York City, and the other at the Museum of the University of Pennsylvania, have recently been deciphered in the past few years and suggest Jesus was an alien shapeshifter? Well, the text describes Judas's betrayal of Christ and say, "Then the Jews said to Judas, 'How shall we arrest him?'" referring to Jesus, "for he does not have a single shape, but his appearance changes. Sometimes he is ruddy, sometimes he is white, sometimes he is red, sometimes he is wheat colored. Sometimes he is pallid, sometimes he is youth, sometimes he is an old man." Another writing from the Coptic language, which is a form of Egyptian, describes how Pontius Pilate had dinner with Jesus the night before his crucifixion. The Roman, who is considered a saint in Coptic churches, which would explain the favorable view of him, tells Jesus, "Well then, behold, the night has come. Rise and withdraw. And when the morning comes and they accuse me because of you, I shall give them only the son I have so that they can kill him in your place." To which Jesus responds, "O Pilate, you have been deemed worthy of a great grace because you have shown a good disposition to me." Jesus then supposedly showed Pilate that he can escape if he chose to by shapeshifting. The text then reads, "Pilate then looked at Jesus, and behold, he became incorporeal. He did not see him for a long time." So, was Jesus a shapeshifting alien? I'm going to leave that one to you to decide. So to continue with this musing, I'm going to move to an interesting piece by Jonathan Parks Ramage. In 1984, a London cabbie named George King received a telepathic communication from an extraterrestrial intelligence named Master Arthurius. Prepare yourself. You are to become the voice of interplanetary parliament. This message was delivered from the planet Venus and was the first of hundreds of similar communications that King had allegedly received over his lifetime, some telepathically and some while in a trance. In 1955, King's experiences inspired him to found the Arthurius Society, a religious group, which, quote, is dedicated to spreading and acting upon the teachings of advanced extraterrestrial intelligences. He soon anointed himself as primary terrestrial mental channel, or I guess like the priest or pope, and devoted his life to cultivating the unorthodox theology of his religion. One of the core beliefs of the Arthurian Society is that extraterrestrial life exists, and that aliens are highly evolved spiritual beings known as cosmic masters. Occasionally, these ETs will take human form and visit us on Earth, so spreading spiritual guidance across the globe. Examples of cosmic masters include Buddha, Sri Krishna, Confucius, and Jesus. The spiritual work of Arthurius Society revolves around five cosmic missions, which are rituals designed to cooperate with these cosmic masters and to heal the world through prayer. In 1959, he moved from the UK to Los Angeles to find the American headquarters for this movement, and he was really determined to spread his beliefs from gods from space, UFOs, spiritual healings, and psychic powers. The same year, he appeared on BBC to talk about his new religion. During this program, he psychically channels the Master Arthurius, and he was rating theatrically as Arthurius spoke through him. Arthurius confirmed that aliens travel the universe in flying saucers, and that the Earth faces a dangerous situation because of deviation from spiritual laws and atomic experimentation. While this may really seem crazy, his ideas would actually gain some traction. Looking at the world history during this time may suggest why this message may have resonated with people. In the year 1955, the founding of the Arthurian Society was also the beginning of the space race, the famous competition between the Soviet Union and the United States for dominance in spaceflight technology. With the world's anxieties fixed to the sky, his philosophy and new religion really offered existential security in response to the unknown possibilities of what's out there in space, the atomic bomb, and the Cold War missile race. So really, people thought gods and UFOs could help us heal the Earth. Though he died in 1997, the Arthurian Society lives on. And one of the philosophies is Mother Earth is a living goddess who can both feel the literal and karmic damage to her. Ultimately, society members work to heal that damage. One follower states, the biggest reason why the Arthurian Society is here and why the cosmic masters came to Earth is because Mother Earth has to change. She'd held herself back for hundreds of thousands of years because she's providing mankind a home to evolve. She's been told by karmic lords that she can no longer hold herself back. And so, the big push by the cosmic masters is to raise as many people up so that they are able to get to the point where they will enter a new age here on Earth. However, some people, like myself, am a little skeptical. You may be inclined to liken this to other charismatic cults with secret mantras and ceremonies. And King was a very serious leader. He expected perfection with an intensity in his behavior. He was, quote, trying to get as much done as he could while he was here in this body, and the people who were closest to him had to keep up with him. Everyone around him would get exhausted, and he would just keep going. George King was a very driven and very intense man, but he could also be very funny, personal, and caring. One of the most unusual ceremonies is called the Operation Prayer Power, where red robe congregants surround a light, great, spiritual prayer battery, in which the energy will be stored and later released to heal the world in a time of crisis. In many ways, the Arthurian Society unites all religious narratives. In their theology, all the great religious leaders, Buddha, Jesus, Krishna, etc., are all the same thing. Earthly manifestations of a greater cosmic master, or masters. Now, your ability to believe this meta-narrative is depending on your willingness to include UFOs and Jesus in the same thought, in the same sentence. But because their narrative is a little weirder, a little stranger than some other theological stories, doesn't make it invalid. Parks and Ramage ask, isn't the story of Jesus, a man who walked on water and cured the blind, also a little bit strange in its very own way? If you have ever had unusual experiences, please be sure to report it to www.mufon.com. For more information about MUFON in Newfoundland and Labrador, be sure to check out the Newfoundland UFO Network on Facebook. Thanks, John.
Just how long have we been receiving these mysterious signals from outer space? I think it's a strange vanity that makes us think we're the only ones in the solar system.
Thank God. It's time for oddities.
It's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Oddities.
All right, guys, it's time for oddities, or in this case, we'll call it goddities. 10 strange but very true facts about a very strange world. I thought it'd be really, really cool to, instead of doing oddities, we're going to do goddities. 10 really strange facts about, well, the Bible and God and all the weirdness that is. Because let's face it, it is a very big paranormal book. There's a lot of weird stuff going on. So, in the second movie of the Matrix trilogy, Agent Smith's license plate is IS5416, okay, which refers to Isaiah 54:16 from the Bible, which reads, "Behold, I have created the smith that bloweth the coals in the fire, that bringeth forth an instrument for his work, and I have created the waster to destroy." Pretty cool, hey? Did you know Methuselah from the Bible is accredited as being the oldest person to have ever lived, dying at the age of 969 years, but it is thought that this is a mistranslation and that he was actually 969 lunar months old when he died, which means he was 78 and a half years old, since early Judaic tribes used lunar months to gauge time. So, you know, older than Methuselah, he's actually pretty average age. Did you know the most shoplifted book in the world is the Bible? Shame on you. You better open up and forgive yourself. So technically you could rob a Bible and then beg for forgiveness, but you know, I like to think God knows what you're at. Did you know unicorns are mentioned in the Bible? Yeah, it might have been actually mentioning domestic bulls or even rhinoceroses, but yeah, there's actually quite a few mentions of the mythological creature known as the unicorn. Did you know that Luke 17:34-36 says the second coming of Jesus will occur while some are asleep at night and others are working at daytime activities in the field? This is a clear indication of a revolving earth with day and night at the same time, something that was never proven during those times. So that's actually a really cool fact from the Bible. Like I said, you know, whether or not you're a believer in God is beside the point. You got to admit, there's a lot of really cool stuff in the Bible that are actually quite true. Here's another one. The people of the whole world, this is actually something that was written, okay, in Revelation. The people of the whole world will be able to see the death and resurrection of these two prophets of Israel. When it was predicted in 30 AD, it would be inconceivable for an event in Jerusalem to be instantly seen by people all over the world. However, now with modern technology like satellite telecommunication, this capability is now a reality. So there you go. That was actually a prediction in Revelation. Okay, that was Revelation 11:7-12. So another cool one too. Revelation, of course, is always so much fun, and Justin, we actually touch on that during an interview a little later in the show, but here's number 7 for you. In Revelation 13:16-18, the Antichrist, referred to as the Beast, causeth all, both small and rich, great and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save that he had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. For the first time in 1900 plus years since the book was written, we now have the technology to actually do that. A tiny chip could be placed under the skin of one's hand that contained identification plus medical and financial records. Purchases would be made by electronic transfer without the use of cash. In addition, this could serve as a global positioning device, allowing the tracking of one's position to within a few feet anywhere on the planet. The idea is to sure to sell. A cashless society could virtually eliminate muggings, the drug trade, tax evasion, everything like that. We cannot say with absolute certainty that this chip will be a vehicle through which the mark of the beast will be given, but it would effectively perform the function. And to be quite honest with you, I see our own cell phones right now as the precursor to that, because guess what? On my phone right now is my life. I can literally buy things, do whatever I want with just my phone. How long is it before the technology shrinks this phone down and puts it into my arm as a chip? It's pretty much inevitable. Here's another oddity for you. I should say goddity. All matter is composed of atoms. Only in recent years has science discovered that everything we see is composed of things that we cannot see. Tiny invisible particles called atoms, made up of electrons and protons, which are really not solids, but positive and negative charges of electricity. Whether he specifically understood it or not, author of the books of Hebrews wrote about atomic structure nearly 2,000 years before it was discovered by scientists. By faith we understand that the words were prepared by the word of God, so that it is seen was not made of things which are visible. Let me repeat that. By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of the things which are visible. Now that was Hebrews 11:3, and the emphasis is definitely added there, that, you know, what is seen was not made out of the things which are visible. That's really interesting, because what makes us up is not visible to the human eye. Another thing from the Bible that was really strange, and actually kind of, you know, he got it right between the eyes when it was written, space is empty. That was something that was said. In ancient times, it was variously believed that the earth sat on a large animal or a giant, or even the mythical Atlas supported the pillars that held the heaven earth apart, and or carried the earth around on his shoulders. Where he stood while doing so presents an interesting conundrum. However, in what is probably the oldest book of the Bible, which is Job, living in an ancient culture that knew nothing about space or planets, asserted that God hung the earth on nothing, okay, which was in 1500 BC, or in other words, the earth free floats in space. And it reads, he stretches out the north over empty space. He hangs the earth on nothing. That's Job 26:7. And guys, I got one last oddity for you, which I thought you guys would find really, really cool, because, you know, you always hear so much bad things about gingers. You leave those gingers alone. Some of my favorite people are redheads, okay? Did you know some assert that Jesus inherited red hair from his ancestor, King David? Original paintings uncovered in circa AD, not 586, Rabula Gospels, depict Jesus with curly red hair. So there you have it. There you have it. Jesus might have been a redhead. So you can't go talking about people with redhead have no souls. That's just silly. Because Jesus may have been a redhead. Oh, guys, I hope some of these interesting facts have really made your day. I hope you really enjoyed your oddities. We're going to be right back with our guest, Justin Cancellieri. You know, we're going to talk about the big guy upstairs. We're going to get into it. Some very philosophical discussion coming your way. Don't you dare go away.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available, always free, always odd.
Hey, welcome back to the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. You know, there's one question that's on the back of many people's minds, whether they be atheist or not. Is there a God? Is there truly a force behind all that we do? You know, this is something that's been kind of at the forefront of my own life. It all started with the paranormal investigations, and here I am now, a believer. Tonight's guest is going to, shall we say, help me pick up a little bit for our Lord. It's about time somebody put a podcast out there about why there is a God, not why there isn't. Tonight, I'm joined by Paratruth Radio co-host and author, Justin Cancellieri. Justin, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing fantastic. How about yourself, John?
I'm doing great, and I'm so glad that I got you for this, because you've been fighting the good fight with Paratruth Radio for the last 3 years. You're the angel versus the devil on the other shoulder, shall we say, in many conversations. And I'm glad you're here tonight to pick up for, well, my other dad, my other father, which is God. So I'm so glad to have you here tonight. You know, one of the things I always tell people is to have an open mind. Even atheists might learn a little something tonight, because we're going to go pretty deep into the idea that there is a creator. Justin, tell me about your relationship with God.
Well, it's kind of a complicated relationship, really, because, you know, as a kid, I was baptized as a Protestant, and when I hit my teen years, a lot of different things in my life, I started thinking, you know, there must not be a God. With all of these different horrible things going on in the world, there's no way that there's somebody out there that is supposedly, quote unquote, looking out for us and keeping us safe and happy. And then around 2009, I started a paranormal podcast called Night Stalkers Radio, and a friend of mine had said, you know, if you're going to be doing this, be doing paranormal investigations, you really should have a good faith and have belief in God. So my cousin Eric and I, who is also my co-host for both Night Stalkers and Paratruth Radio, did a cleansing meditation, and I think we both at that time had a re-emergence of our faith. Eric had a much more powerful re-emergence than myself. I still question things in the Bible and question the way things are done, but for the most part, we both believe in the fact that there is a God, that there is a creator, that Jesus Christ came down and was killed and resurrected for us. And there are other base principles in there that I adhere to, but for the most part, I'm questioning a lot of things when I read the Bible. But that's why we have Paratruth Radio, because Eric is a fundamentalist Christian where I kind of question certain things.
There you go. And it's good to have that person who, how shall we say, have the level head about all this. You know, There's many books written in science about many scientific theories that to this very day get disproven every day. There's things written that are truth and there's things written that might not be. And we just go with our current flow, shall we say, in science. So when it comes to religion, we were basing everything on a book that was written thousands of years ago. So It makes quite a lot of sense, really, that we question that book. But it all goes back to the fundamental, really the beginning, shall we say, is there a creator?
Right. Yeah.
So my question for you is, you know, in your own mind, what makes you believe there truly is a God?
Well, you know, I look at this world every day and think to myself, there has to be something more to this than just, as I've said on my show, a little fart in the universe and then everything was created. There's obviously an intelligence behind the creation. And, you know, I've seen him working in my life more and more, especially since I came back to my faith, because I would not have met so many different people in my life. For example, my wife, Shelley. Yeah, there was a lot of heartache in between where I felt that it wasn't needed, but looking back, it led me to her. Same thing with my book. You know, God led me to a good friend, you, John, to tell me, hey, there is a way to do this, and it's an easy way to do it. And, you know, the more I look back at things, the more I see his blessings, and I'm amazed that I'm so blessed. And, you know, one thing that I've been struggling with is, you know, I work at the post office. I've been applying to be a postmaster, and I've been denied several times, and I looked at it, and at first I was upset, but then I started thinking, you know what? I think God's telling me I need to write. I need to get all of my stuff done, and that's why he's keeping me where I'm at.
You know, and I could relate to that 100%. Here I am now, 8 months into the fostering process to become a foster parent. I'm already a parent of 2 children. Taking on this extra child, I mean, this is just something that came out of absolutely nowhere. And let me tell you, it's been a pretty dark couple of years in my life. Like, things have not been going the greatest. And I know that he's behind things because there's things that have happened for a reason. It's insane, the amount of little intricate parts that have lined up in order for this to take place. And that's something I always talk to people about too. And I know we're gonna go on a big old philosophical rant. That's what the whole purpose of tonight is, Justin. You're allowed to do that on my podcast. It's awesome. Because you know what? I see him working in my life too. And like, if anybody knows the story of my father Don Mallard, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And, you know, I encourage anybody to pick up my book as well, Newfie EVP, Talking with Dad Newfoundland, if you want to learn more about that situation. But that's pretty much what brought me into the idea that there is a God. There's something behind the scenes working, you know? Tell me a little tiny bit about some of the paranormal subjects you think may be God-related. You know, one thing that pops in my head right away, he created it all, so he must know about it all, you know? Right. There's only one person, or shall we say being, that knows there truly is a Bigfoot, and it's probably God. You know, I always ask people, it's an interesting question, what do you think God was thinking when he created all these cryptids and whatnot, the ones you do believe in anyhow?
Well, you know, a lot of people that I've talked to, and this is coming from a Christian fringe area because I do have a lot of friends in that area, will say that, you know, it wasn't God, it was the fallen that created these hybrid creatures that we would call cryptids today. And, you know, I would argue that, yes, the fallen may have created them, but if God didn't allow it, it wouldn't have happened. So he allowed these creatures to come into the world. And, you know, yeah, it boggles the mind to think that he allowed these creatures to not only be created into existence, but keep them around, because obviously they are still around. We're still seeing evidence of these things. Otherwise, we wouldn't have, you know, all these different TV shows about Bigfoot and ghosts and all these other different things, Destination Truth, all these different shows. So I think that he had a very master plan in that as well. And, you know, it is just so funny to think, you know, really, what was he thinking to keep him around? Because I don't think anybody can really answer the question.
You know, my dad got me really, really good one time. I was coming in from a ghost hunt. And, you know, at this stage of my life, I'm an atheist big time. In fact, I still believe that this stuff, a lot of this paranormal stuff and happening is coming from an extra dimension of space we don't know about. Anyway, that's beside the point. Dad looks at me, he goes, so let me get this straight. You sat alone in the dark for 6 hours and talked to absolutely nothing with nothing talking to you? I said, yeah. He goes, sounds a lot like prayer, John. It takes a lot of faith to do that, doesn't it? So there you go. And you know, there to me, there's little hints all throughout everything all around us that there might be or should be a creative force. You know, one of the things that blows my mind is the DNA code. You know, the DNA code informs and programs a cell's behavior. How did that code come into an existence? You know what I mean? Like, that is like, what is your thought on that? Like, that first, shall we say, step to creating life? Because, you know, in science's view, there has to be a jump-in point. But as of right now, science has not figured out how inanimate matter has come to life.
Right.
So, well, where does your heart and mind kind of lie with that?
Again, I mean, if you look at a DNA sequence, the double helix, I mean, just random things coming together because of a quote-unquote perfect environment, that to me is the most absurd thing I've ever heard. Yes, I do believe in science and that they are explaining a lot of the stuff that we know today, but, you know, there's even quantum physicists that are saying that there is more proof that there is a God than proof that there is not. And I think that's why. I mean, there's no way all of this different, these different things, these different creatures, these different people could be created just out of a whim. And yeah, people are created out of a mother and father's DNA combining, but who created that first DNA strand? I mean, in my opinion, it's God.
Do you think that's where God might have jumped off the train, though? Do you think he kind of put things into spin and left us alone and every now and then he intervenes? Or do you think that he's an omnipresence?
I think that he put things in motion. I think that he gives us our soul and our spirit. But as far as anything else is concerned, it's just a matter of, chance, really. And yeah, he does have a hand in it per se, but in the long run, I think he's letting us find our own way, whether that be create life, don't create life, the genetics of different diseases. I think that comes into kind of like the Pandora's box sort of a thing, where all these different things were released into the world because bad things were happening. So I think that he had released those things because of the fact that, according to the Bible, we are fallen people, which I do believe that we are both good and bad. So therefore, we're fallen because we're not just good.
There's many, many times in my life I wish I was a lot better than what I am.
Well, yeah, I think everybody, I hope everybody would feel that way.
Which begs the question, why do we as animals, per se, say if science truly is the winner here, if we are animals, then why are we at all friendly to each other? Why don't we just kill each other and take each other's resources? I don't understand how that became a thing. I know that there's communities of animals, but they still kill their young and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I see a lot of stuff in nature that kind of mimics what we are, but it's not completely what we are. Whatever it is that makes us different, that soul we keep talking about, I think that's what makes us special compared to the other animals. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's one thing, and since we're talking about biology, and I'm such a nerd, I'm going to jump into this. You know, there's parallels between science and scripture, and they continue, of course, into the field of biology. You know, in Genesis, okay, it is written, "Then the Lord God formed man of dust from the ground." And today it's common knowledge that our bodies are made of the same elements and minerals that are found on the earth. Do you think the Bible kind of just said it right then and there? How did they know that? I think that just blows my mind, you know?
Yeah, one thing that was said to me about the Bible was this particular person thought that it was just people back then trying to explain quantum physics without the instruments that we have today. But at the same time, yes, I can understand that, but also no, because even though you're trying to explain quantum physics, there is still more to this stuff than just quantum physics. And one thing that I've always felt is that humanity was put here, maybe even just created specifically on this planet, but everybody's looking for the missing link. And the reason we're not going to find that missing link is because humans, as we are today, have always been here, and there is no link between, for example, Cro-Magnon man and humans today. And there's that argument that's always been there, and it's like, oh, we found the missing link. Oh, no, we didn't.
Well, you're missing thousands. You're missing thousands of missing links. Right. That's the problem, right?
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing is people will use science, which, again, like I said, I believe in science. I think that's what we're using to understand the world today. We'll sit there and try and patch that missing link instead of just thinking, maybe we were just here. Maybe we were placed here on purpose without evolution, which I do believe in evolution, but I think it's a little bit less jumpy than what we would think. I think that it doesn't jump heaps and bounds. I think it's very miniature. And that's what most people will jump to. Well, evolution.
But see, the thing is, yeah. The Bible also talks about evolution, though, and it predicts it perfectly. In fact, in Genesis it said, and God said, let the earth put forth vegetation was the first thing you put on it. And of course, as we know, evolutionary theory, according to the theory, the first microscopic life forms to appear on Earth were actually indeed plants. So it's almost like Genesis predicted all of this anyway. Even the science is kind of backing it up in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? It's really, really interesting, actually, when you get into it. And I think what happens with a lot of people is they kind of pick up their Bible and they read it. And they just read it and they skim through and some parts affect them. And you know, that's great. But if you actually study it, it's really interesting to see the parallels. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts on our untimely demise? Unfortunately, Justin, me and you someday will die. It's official. I hate to tell you. And if you haven't heard this before, I'm so sorry to break the bad news to you. But someday me and you are going to go in the ground. Our hearts will no longer beat. Our brains will cease to function. We're going to die. I hate to say it to you, bud. What are your thoughts on death when it comes to all this?
Well, obviously, as you just said, death is inevitable. A lot of people are scared of it. I've finally in my life come to the realization that it's going to happen regardless. And, you know, there's this huge debate about what happens after this physical body dies. And, you know, atheists would say, oh, it's just we go into the ground and that's all that's left. And, you know, the religious people will say, well, no, we have a spirit, we have a soul, and we live on. And science now is even saying we have an energy inside of us, and energy doesn't just die, it transforms. So, you know, in my opinion, yes, there is life after death. Yes, there's a thing to this ghost hunting and ghosts. You know, what happens? Do we transition from this plane to a different plane? That part, I don't know. Do we have that choice of staying here or moving on to the next? Again, a huge thing up for debate. I particularly believe that we have the choice to stay here if we so choose to, but my cousin, of course, would argue with me that we are forced to either go to heaven or hell, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing, you know, my last guest, of course, very controversial guest, completely stirred up the whole paranormal world, shall we say, Cindy Sauer. And, of course, she's afflicted by a demonic entity. You know, we talked a little bit at length about Jesus and her life and stuff like that, and she claims Jesus is her savior. She's one of the reasons why she's still alive and kicking is God. So it's interesting, even in the darkest of dark, we still find that light. And, you know, I got to believe myself, after many years of researching this stuff as an atheist and now turned Christian, I mean, my heart is a lot more calmer than what it was 5 years ago about all this. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's right. And that's one of the good things that I get from all this. When we do die, if there is an afterlife, I feel a lot better. I really do, right? It definitely, shall we use the term, it will completely chill you out. But there's still a sense of urgency to complete your deeds on this planet. And, you know, you kind of jumped into that a little earlier when you were talking about getting your book wrote. And, you know, I want you to talk a little bit more about that because, of course, as you mentioned, I kind of was like, hey, Justin, this is what you should do. You know, don't give up on this dream. Make it happen, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me a little tiny bit about what was going on at that point, because at that point in my life, it was, I have to message Justin and tell him this. There was no other reason, no reason for you. Like, no offense, Justin, but you're not exactly like my best friend or anything. You're someone I talk to occasionally on Facebook, yeah. Right? And just right. Something just told me, I have to message you today. And I just messaged you randomly and was like, how you doing, buddy? And you were like, I'm not too good, and this is why. And I was like, oh, this is what you should do. Like, that serendipity, that like, why do you think that happened?
Well, for a long time, I've felt that I'm meant for something else. And for that same amount of time, I've also felt that writing is my purpose. And I do believe that God sent you to me to say, you can get this done. There are ways to do it. And I'm sure a lot of writers go through that same process. If they submit a book and it's not picked up by a traditional publisher, they're very butthurt about it, which, I mean, I really was, because I got one email back saying, sorry, this isn't for us. And then the rest were just, I don't know if they ignored it or saw it and weren't interested, but they don't respond. I'm not sure. And, you know, looking at self-publishing, as far as the big self-publishers out there, costs a lot of money to publish with them. So in this point in my life, you know, I'm not rolling in gold. So I was really frustrated with it. And, you know, I think that's when God stepped in and sent you to me and basically was an answer to my prayers, because I had no clue what more to do to get it out there.
Well, I'm glad I got to be a part of that. I think it's really neat. And, you know, it only makes sense for us to now plug your book, like I promised. Justin, tell me all about this book. For God's sakes, man, we've talked about it like on and off now for 25 minutes. Tell everyone about this wonderful book. Tell them.
All right. The title is The Legendary Creature Project, The Griffon. And that's Griffon, G-R-Y-P-H-O-N. And most people will probably question me, well, Griffon's not spelled that way. I got that from the original Greek translation for this particular creature. And the Griffon is a half eagle, half lion. And the premise of the book, basically, to put it in a nutshell without going too much into a huge synopsis, is about a mad scientist named Dr. York Hemshine, who decides he wants to bring legendary creatures to modern day. And he decides to do that by human genetic manipulation. And he brings forth Achilles, the Griffon. And a lot of the story is about their relationship growing and eventually it falling apart. And we go on an adventure where Hillary, the main heroine, if you will look into this and decide to save Achilles.
See? These are the thoughts going through the postmaster's, well, soon-to-be postmaster, I might add. Postmaster's mind at work. Make no wonder you're all jumble, you know what I mean? And to get them out on paper, I mean, it really is exciting when you finally get your idea on paper. What's even more exciting is when people check out the book and read it and tell you, man, we love this book. And there's no better feeling in the world as an author. If only one person read my book and messaged me and said, I love this book, I would have known all my toil was not in vain. So where can people find this book too, Justin?
It is specifically on Amazon, but it is on our Paratruth website, because I don't have my author site up yet, paratruthradio.com. And you can go there to click to order the book, or I also have a link there to get an autographed copy as well.
See? That's awesome. And all my listeners will hopefully go check it out. Do they have like a sample on there they can try to read for a little bit, or?
Not on the website, but on Amazon, yeah. If you just type in the search engine, The Legendary Creature Project, The Griffon, you'll find it. You can also type in my name, Justin Cancellieri, C-A-N-C-I-L-L-I-E-R-E, and you'll find both the e-reader version and the paperback.
Cancellieri. God, I'll never get that right. But you guys, you know, if you're listening to the show right now, give Justin a chance. Jump in there. You know, take the free sample for Amazon, man. And if you like the book, buy the book. Support our guys. I'm a big fan of authors. In fact, just about every guest on this show is an author. And I want to share that message with everybody. Of course, we're done promoting the book now. We still got about 5 minutes left to the minute, actually. We're going to talk about a little bit more about the big guy upstairs. We gotta jump in a few more questions here, okay? You know, there's creationism, of course, and there's a lot of stuff in there that makes some sense and a lot of stuff that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, I think of a certain arc we all talk about. you know, there's a lot of things written in the Bible that we feel aren't really accurate, might only be a part of an explanation or completely made up. And then there's parts of the Bible that we feel are, you know, the real deal, you know, that just speak to so many people. Justin, is there any particular part of the Bible you feel, you know, just really speaks to you? You know, and then that's a really personal question, I know, but, you know, is there a part of that book that just really hits at home, we'll say?
The biggest part for me is the creation, really. Genesis one. And when he gets to creating man and how much love he had for us, and I mean, he still does, but he had so much love for us that he wanted us to live forever with him in Eden. And unfortunately, as humans, we decided to mess that up because we are curious creatures by nature. And a lot of people blame the snake, aka the devil, but honestly, we have free will. So we made that choice to take that apple and walk away from Eden and paradise to live the life that we're living now. So it really is an interesting story of how we were created in the Bible. And a lot of the stuff in between up to Revelations is good, but Revelations is by far, it, as much as it pains me to say this, my favorite book, because it does show a lot of what is either to come or is happening now, because a lot of the stuff I feel is said in Revelations is happening today.
Yeah, well, you know, that's something I'm super into, because, like, okay, I hate to say Nostradamus, here it comes, I'm gonna say it, but I love, not like, I'm a sucker for those documentaries. I love Nostradamus, I love him, I do, I love his stuff, and I'm sorry to say, but he's not the original. Right. Many things have been predicted, and, you know, you're talking a little tiny bit about some things that are going on right now that were talked about in Revelation. Why don't you go ahead and share some with us, man? This is really interesting. I love this stuff.
Well, I mean, honestly, just like Nostradamus predicted, I honestly feel we're heading into World War III, which I think will be what we would put into the Bible as the Great War for Revelations, where we start to transition into that period of where we're transitioning into that point where the ascension or the rapture will happen. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, that won't happen or it'll happen at this point and not at this point. I truly don't know if that will happen at all, but I think Revelation is predicting a third world war where after that, the world will be at peace for a while.
So, like, I'm looking at stuff that's happening in the news right now. Like, we're doing this interview with you right now. It's about, oh, the 12th, we'll say, of August, right? And, I mean, just the other day, Trump put up this, you know, listen up, Korea, right? like, listen right. up, right? Like, we're not taking this crap. This is going to be bad. Like, you got to adhere. And he was very, very adamant with that. And he's like, I'm getting everything ready. And he even said in a tweet of all things, like, oh, my God, I can't believe we get our White House news through tweets. But, like, oh, my God. And you know what the worst thing is? I'm Canadian, so we're going to be too stoned to even help you guys when this war happens. And, and what's going and, like, I look at that tweet, you know, like, the escalation of war is right there. Whew. Yeah. Is there anything else in Revelation right now that kind of sticks out to you that's going on?
Unfortunately, I'm a little rusty on all of it, but a lot of people were saying to me that the final Trump in Revelations, I believe, and that represents President Trump. How true that is, I don't know. I don't know if that's a conspiracy theory among Christians. I'm not sure. But when Trump was elected into office, first and foremost, everybody was like, oh, Hillary. But the presidential debate from the time until election time was just a complete show. And neither of them at that point, I believed, were worthy of representing the United States of America. Trump is doing some good things now that he's in office. I do give him that credit. But there are a lot of things that he can be handling better. And it could be that mainstream media is not reporting. Well, we all know that they're not reporting the way that they should, and just making things out of nothing. But that's something that still sticks in my mind because of what is happening between U.S. and North Korea. And he's cutting a lot of ties. He's pulling away from the UN and from NATO, and he's pulling away from a lot of countries. He has started building the wall for Mexico, which honestly, I think we need to all just come together instead of separating ourselves. But in Revelations, that is said too, you know, mother against son, father against daughter, we will be fighting against our own families.
You know, it's a chilling thought, but there's only supposed to be one more world war. That's another really cool thing about all this. This is supposed to be a time of peace after this, so let's hope that it's resolved very quickly. You know, maybe it could be just a friendly game of dodgeball or something. You know, it doesn't have to be nuclear war. Maybe we could, you know, I don't know, have a friendly game of tetherball or something. I don't know, man, Justin. This stuff scares the hell out of me, I'll be honest with you. But I know that Trump isn't the one who, shall we say, is in the driver's seat. He really isn't. The people who are behind the administration, they're not really in the driver's seat either. It's God. God's the one who's in the driver's seat, man. And in him, I'll trust. So with that, I'll sleep well tonight. Guys, Justin from Paratruth Radio, great show. Check it out. Of course, they had yours truly as a guest once upon a time, so they can't be that bad. Check them out. Of course, they're all over the place. They're everywhere. Justin's book, once again, check it out on Amazon. The name of the book again, Justin, is?
The Legendary Creature Project, The Griffin.
The Legendary Creature Project, The Griffin. Don't forget that, folks. Check it out. Justin, thanks so much for being on the Odd, the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd, the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, @ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.